Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I am so delighted that we are going to be starting this month off, right off the bat, with a wonderful, wonderful publication that I know that you'll enjoy hearing about by a gentleman who is in Alpine, Utah. His name is R. William Bennett, and he has joined us today. I want to welcome you, Willem. William?
Thank you. Thank you, Donna. It's good to be here.
Well, you're interesting because you're a man that has held executive positioning at IBM and Franklin Covey. You've been involved with many different organizations as a speaker. Yet, here you are, and you just started this in 2009, making a decision about becoming a full-time writer. What made you jump from an involvement that would have kept you at a very, very intense pace of action and movement of mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual, to deciding to become a full-time writer? That was a leap of faith, wasn't it?
It was. It was. And it really, while it happened at one particular evening, it really was built for years. I have wanted, like so many people have, to write a book in my lifetime, several books. And yet I was having a great career that I thoroughly enjoyed, and I always felt that the moment would come when I would know for sure it was time to make that jump. And I was on a business trip up in Washington, and I was sitting in my hotel room, and I don't know what prompted this thought, but I was sitting there just thinking to myself, you know, if I died today, what would I be disappointed with? And while our marriage isn't perfect, I feel like my wife and I have tried hard to make a good marriage. We've tried to be dedicated parents. We feel close to our children and our extended family. We try to be involved in our community. And I felt, you know, I'd feel pretty good about most things, except this gnawing feeling that I've had for a lot of my life that I wanted to write. And I just felt that I would be very disconcerted if I was laying in my deathbed never having given it a try. And it struck me, now's the time. And I called my wife and said, I think this is the time. And she knew exactly what I was talking about. And 12 hours later, we had I'd spoken to the CEO of my company and with my children, and we began the process of starting up the lifestyle of being a full-time writer.
Which means that peanut butter and celery periodically.
Oh, you periodically. Peanut butter and celery is a good day.
Oh, I'm being a stinker. I'm sorry. But I couldn't resist that because that is such a dramatic shift. But I have to say that this book that you have published called The Christmas Gift is absolutely wonderful. You have done an incredible job with it. To me, when I'm reading it, it could be easily a tradition with a family or with anyone that likes traditional activities around the holidays. You know, some people like the apple cider and cookies on Christmas Eve, and other people have other little rituals that they do, you know, with their children. But I think that your story touches so many different levels of the heart, the mind, and the spirit that it is not only well written, but you did put your heart into it. Now, before we go into the story, I need to ask you a personal question. Was this based on your own personal experience?
Well, there are threads of my personal experiences throughout a good deal of the characters in the story. There isn't one particular character that's autobiographical, but I've used experiences I've had, and we haven't talked, of course, about the characters, but feeling like going through experiences that various characters in the story have gone through to try to really bring a validity to the description so that it was something that didn't sound like I was just observing from afar.
I think any good writer puts themselves in what they do. And that has been my observation. Of course, I review 400 to 600 books a year, so I guess I'd be in a position to make a comment along those lines. But I really mean that. I think that anyone, whether it is science fiction or the writing of your story, the Christmas gift, it doesn't make any difference. There is that that is being expressed that you feel must be stated. So however it is costumed with words doesn't make any difference, but it is something that is heartfelt, and that comes across in your book. Now, you have a quote right at the beginning of the book that I really like. It's by Herman Melville. "We cannot live only for ourselves. 1,000 fibers connect us with our fellow men. And among those fibers, as sympathetic threads, our actions run as causes, and they come back to us as effects." I think that that is a wonderful, wonderful lead-in to your book. And you also say you dedicate it to all those who have offered an apology, no matter how difficult, to those who have given forgiveness, deserved or not, and to those who are striving to do so. How long did it take you to do this story?
Well, you know, it was a concentrated month, really, of sitting down and working on it. The story had been swimming around in my head for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you a quick sideline on that. When I left my job to do this, I actually left to write a business book in leadership that I had been working on for a number of years. And my daughter, for whom this story was originally created, came to me and said, "Dad, I think you need to do this first." And it wasn't in this form. And, you know, I said, "Well, let me get to the business book." That was kind of my plan first. And she just sort of wouldn't let go.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally thought, you know, out of the mouths of babes. So I pushed my work on my business book into a back of a drawer. And then for a month, really, just sort of all hours of the day, worked on this story. And, you know, at the end of it, felt that it had gotten the feeling I'd been hoping for.
Well, I think you definitely got it. Now, I want my listeners to know that this addresses a subject that is coming up in the news so frequently today, and it's bullying. And this is a story about a little boy by the name of Scott and his journey in learning and understanding of how to communicate and deal with people. It's really quite profound. But in today's world, I am sometimes saddened by the fact that people seem to want a magic bullet when it comes to human relationships. We have gotten so involved with technology that we have forgotten that these are human beings doing things to other human beings. So we need to stop thinking like computers and get into the space of trying to find out what's really going on, stop making excuses for things. I'm up on my little soapbox. And then to really get at the heart. And that's part of what your story is. Were you bullied in school?
I think probably to the degree most of us were. I mean, not incessantly, but I certainly experienced it as almost everyone I know went through at least one episode, you know, of being bullied. So had some personal experiences with that. And it doesn't stop at school. Certainly
mm-hmm.
experienced bullying as an adult in the workplace and other places.
Oh, yes. It's all over. Let's talk about the character Scott. Is he based a little bit on you, or was this something you related to other members in the family?
Well, there are some parts of it. Frankly, Scott is more kind of what I aspired to be. I
mm-hmm.
would like to have been a lot more like Scott. He has a friend, Andy, in the story. It's kind of more average, and I guess I felt that I wanted to be Scott. I wanted to be this young man who had enough character, even at a young age, to not accept judgments that everybody
mm-hmm.
else was making. But yet, I think I tripped up enough that I was more like his friend, who's supposed to be kind of the average one of all of us, who did fall into that trap. And he's not a bad young man. But
no.
He's someone who you know, would go along with the crowd at times and, you know, join in passing those judgments on people that they really didn't understand.
I think that's part of growing up. I think that's part of what we do until we gain enough wisdom to be comfortable in our own skin, is to be discerning.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a word that keeps coming up for me this week, discernment. And that is what the character Scott develops through this beautiful story that you've written. Now, there's Andy, who's his buddy, and then there is Ben. Now, Ben is a fascinating character. And in the beginning of the story, it's like you want to take this kid by the ears, shake him until his brain rattles, and then just say, are you paying attention? And I want to say, this has quite an interesting twist and turn inside the story itself. Who did you base Ben on?
Well, there's really a couple, or I'd say three characters. First, there was a young man in our school growing up who was most of the young people were afraid of, who maybe didn't outwardly bully everybody, but was very imposing in his appearance. And a few years later, after I had left that school, a friend had told me that this young fella had taken his own life. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, who was he? I mean, none of us knew him. We were all happy to make fun of him behind his back and put a name on him, but nobody really understood this guy. And so, you know, that was one part of the character, was this young man who's got some real depth to his life and some issues in his life that nobody else understood.
Mm-hmm.
The other part, and perhaps a little bit of the self-experience, not that I was a bully. I don't think that was ever really in my character or even ability, perhaps. I probably didn't have the stature to be a bully, even if I wanted to be. But, I spent a year at a school that was a boarding school, and it was a decision that long ago my parents and I both wish we'd never made, but I went away for 1 year of high school to a boarding school and found myself entirely alone and didn't have any friends and found I didn't identify with anybody there. And those experiences come out, too, as to what it's like to be someone who, for whatever reason, doesn't find themselves inside any group of friends. And, and then just some general experiences with young people. I remember being bullies. And Ben is sort of a composite of all these people.
He really is. And you've done a wonderful job with him. Of course, Scott has moved into a new community with his family, which he didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And where I'm located in the Pacific Northwest, we have a lot of military families. And this brought back memories of knowing kids when I was growing up who were in military families and had a terrible time adjusting. Some didn't have the problem, but many did, and they'd have to start all over again. And it was a very big adjustment. And this is what the character Scott is going through right at the beginning of the book. And, of course, he doesn't want to stand out. He doesn't want to be recognized by anybody. But sure enough, there is Big Ben. And he recognizes him, and he doesn't really have to do very much. And I think you're mentioning the character that you knew in school was probably a good base for him, because just of the size, when you think of that, when you're in junior high and high school, even elementary school, when you have somebody that's really super big, it's automatically intimidating, and you're already learning about the do's and the don'ts from the adults that are around you. But then to establish the pecking order within your own generation, that's a challenge, because you don't really know sometimes what to do, especially if you're in a new turf.
Right. Yeah, it is, you know, though those young people in, you know, fifth or sixth or seventh grade are the same age, you know, they really can in effect be 4 or 5 years or more apart in age in their physical development, their maturity, their experiences. It's a wild diversity that really exists in those grades. And, you know, and relationships get a lot of bumps and bruises as a result.
And then you bring into the parts of your story, and it's a very moving read, because Scott's beginning to recognize that there are things that he can't do. He's physically not anywhere close to this kid's size. So he is aware that he has to use his mind, and he has to, you know, just use his mouth. But that gets him into trouble.
It does. You know, Scott, early in the story, as you know, in the first thing that really causes an interaction between him and Ben is that he stands up for one of Ben's victims on the playground. Mm-hmm. And that's what puts him in Ben's sights, and consequently makes him a target. Later, when Scott, kind of in a burst of anger, lashes out at Ben verbally and finds he cuts him, and his Scott's conscience is troubling him as a result. He doesn't have any way to deal with that or deal with Ben other than to just go apologize. And mm-hmm. and that is it's a frightening experience for him. While he's making kind of jokes in his own mind in the story, he literally is terrified to go to this young man and make an apology. And yet that is really the catalyst that begins this very unique relationship between these two boys.
And then we're going into the holiday Halloween where they're trick-or-treating and they have to go to the house. And Scott's conscience just won't let him rest. It just won't let him rest because he saw something in the eyes of Ben that when he verbally attacked him in his stance of self-defense, he couldn't shake it. It's like mm-hmm. something spoke to him, and you've described it very, very well. And then there was going up to the house when they were trick-or-treating. And it was, quite an experience. This Scott is portrayed as a kid that has this capacity for looking at things with a level of depth. And he cannot ignore it. It's as if that conscience inside of him is so strong, it demands action. But then you have a scene with his dad, Scott's father, that I think is so profound because he's getting old enough where the father realizes that he needs to support his son and instruct his son, but not necessarily make decisions of conscience for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite profound. I think that is a very, very good portrayal of what I think is the real substance of a good parent child relationship.
Well, I would agree, and I think that a little context on that is that the story I originally created the story because my daughter was heading off to junior high, and it's such a brutal time, and mm-hmm. and I wanted her to be thinking for herself, what kind of person do I want to be? And how am I going to treat people instead of me lecturing her, saying, this is what I want you to do. I want you to look for people that are outside the quote-unquote groups and put out a hand to them. I wanted her to think about it. And I think young people have an incredible capacity to do that. But sometimes I think all what they just need from their parent is a couple of well-placed questions. And that was really what that scene was trying to do, is both to suggest to a younger person reading the book, what should I be listening to that's going on inside me, and to suggest to a parent that's reading a book, maybe lecturing and demanding is not the way to build a child's character, but instead to, like I said, ask a few well-placed questions and to let that marvelous little mind they have start to do some work, mind and soul do some work.
And one of the things about the character of the father was that he was not judgmental in the sense that he listened to his son. And all of us as adults can utilize that more effectively than we do. But I think teaching it to a child and a youngster is very, very important, to be able to listen, and how rumors are started up. How do you get your facts? Mm-hmm. Where do you get your information from? And, of course, the common response would be go to the source, whatever that source is.
Right.
So for this young boy, his source is Ben himself going to his home. And that is something that goes against the grain of his best friend Andy, who thinks mm-hmm. he's totally insane because Andy says, you're nuts, he's going to kill you. You're going to get stomped. Because this is one big kid, and mm-hmm. his sheer size just intimidates everybody. And when you talk about this scene and the portrayal of Scott's emotions, I think anyone reading this can relate to what you're talking about, because we've all had to face fears of going up against someone or going into an environment where we very easily could be rejected. And this is an excellent portrayal of a young man finding out about the strength of character that he really does have, and that it wasn't the wrong thing to do. It was the right thing for him to do.
Yeah, thank you. We have a saying around our home that we used in the raising of our children is that character is what happens when what you want to do and what you ought to do are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I have to say, that part of that scene was taken directly from an episode in my life when I had done something wrong. You know, for the life of me, I can't even remember what it was now, but I was probably 8 or 9 years old, and I had come home and I'd done something to some other young boy on our street, and I told my mother about it, and she was adamant that I owed him an apology, and I agreed with her. And that walk from our house that probably was 200 yards to this young guy's house,
mm-hmm,
was 50 miles that day,
mm-hmm,
and except when I got to the door. Then it happened a little too fast, and every step he took up the step and the trepidation of, oh my gosh, do I ring the bell? Do I knock on the door? What do I do? I mean, that was, I can still recall that anxiety of going and facing this, first of all, this young guy's mother, who I know he would have talked to, and she would, you know, confront me on, you know, why did you do something to hurt my son? And so that was very taken from my own foibles, I guess,
mm-hmm,
in my youth.
Well, I could feel that when I was reading it. And then he has an interaction with the mother, who she's a very gracious woman, and she knows what's going on, but there are some extenuating circumstances about Ben. But again, Ben finally is reached by Scott, because Scott does apologize. And that's something that this young man has never heard from anyone, ever.
Right. And the story behind the story there, too, is that, you know, we so often, I think all of us in our lives, we look at someone who perhaps creates offense constantly with other people, and then when we maybe do something offensive to them, it's so easy to justify and to say, well, you know, the scale is so out of balance, I don't really need to say I'm sorry, or I don't need to take responsibility for my actions, because consider all the things this person has done to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the difficult but eventually liberating understanding for Scott that his father helped him find is it didn't matter what Ben did. It didn't matter if Ben did something of offense once or 100 times. He had done something wrong, and he needed to make right the thing that he had done wrong, and that our own responsibility to answer for our actions stands alone. And it's not put into a scale and said, well, under normal circumstances, you'd be responsible, but because of these other extenuating circumstances, you're not. And as I said, it becomes a liberating factor
mm-hmm,
to Scott in the long run.
It really does. And then he and Ben end up, and I'm not going to say everything that goes on in the interim, mm-hmm, because I want people to get your book, but I really think that your portrayal of the development of what would have been considered an absolutely impossible friendship grows into something that's quite spectacular. And Scott learns a lot of things about this fellow student, Ben, that he had no clue about. And there is a lot that goes on that ends up interacting with other people. And people just don't, you know, his own peers just don't know what to make of him. Why would he spend time with this person who was a bully that was intimidating to everybody? And one of the points that you bring out in this is that many times people's fears create perceptions that are false. And they do that because they're afraid to look at truth with clarity. They're afraid to ask the question, who are you? What do you do? Why are you here? Or why do you do what you do? It's an interesting positioning to be in, and it's a real eye-opener. So I think your story has quite a bit of substance to it. Now, it has a very interesting ending, and I'm not going to be mentioning that. Mm-hmm. But when you were putting this story together, you realized that you needed to have a closure with the story. And I found what you did, and again, you'll have to get the book, folks, to find out what mm-hmm. happened with Ben and Scott. But there is also someone else in the story. And that is a Mr. Tanner. A Mr. Tanner. And I think Mr. Tanner has such a very, very special story to tell. Now, inasmuch as you have been a speaker and you have traveled and you've been involved in corporations and so many different, very significant teamings with people, how has the response been to this story for those that you've shared it with?
That's a very interesting question. It's been primarily very positive. In fact, overwhelmingly positive. I'll tell you, the audiences, the three primary audiences I've heard from, one was expected. I've heard from a lot of young people. I've got a whole plethora of pen pals now of young teens who've emailed me and just talked about their life and their school, and it's been delightful to get to know some of these people. Perhaps a little more surprising for me is that I heard from a great deal of mothers who wrote me, who read the book and said, you know, I'm a mother of a child who was not accepted or was outside a group or was bullied, you know, a mother of someone who was like Scott or like Ben. And it created a real forum for a discussion about those feelings, especially with some of these mothers who have a child that they know is doing something that maybe isn't the best, and yet mm-hmm. they still love that child with all their heart, and they've got this pain they feel that I love my child. I don't condone his or her actions, but I love them, and it's really created a wonderful platform for an interesting dialogue. The third audience is I heard from a number of men, you know, 40s and 50s in age, and who said, boy, I read your book, and in the first couple chapters, I thought, oh my gosh, why is my wife making me read this? And by the end, you know, one wrote a nice review for me on one of the online sites, and he said, by the end, I was so afraid I would wake my wife with my crying. Mm-hmm. And he said, the thing that struck me as I read your book is, you know, kind of a deed on my part, unresolved from a long time ago. And this mm-hmm. this one particular gentleman who had several occasions of this same similar story sought out and wrote this person that he felt that he'd done something to hurt, done something to hurt this other person way back in their junior high years, mm-hmm. and just said, I know it's late, you know, 30 years late, but I just wanted to tell you I'm sorry for what I said. And, you know, I don't know the reasons that all writers write, but I can tell you for me that there really is not any greater reward than hearing somebody say, boy, this made my world a little better and helped to make somebody else's world a little better. And so there have been lots and lots of positive. I will also say there's been a few people that got kind of angry at the book and said, mm-hmm. you know, this is schmaltzy. This is not the way life is. You know, things don't get resolved like this. And, you know, a few of them that I kind of opened a conversation with, you know, there was some pain those people were carrying from something, either having been the object of somebody who hurt them or having hurt someone else and never having felt good about it but not wanting to deal with it. And so it seems to open up a lot of interesting chambers of the heart when someone reads it.
Yes, it does. And speaking of that, I want people to know that they can go to your website, R. William Bennett, and that's BENNETT.com. You can find out more about the book. But this is the kind of book. It is not a gigantic book. But I would say if you choose to get it as a gift for someone, I want you to read it first. I'd like you to buy two. Buy one for yourself and then buy one for a friend. And there's a section in the back of his book where if you wanted to make some notes for yourself, you can do that. But what it will do, it will make you aware of the power that we have as individuals. One person, you've heard me say this on the show so many times, one person makes a difference. And every person is significantly needed in this world. That's why you're here. But this book, The Christmas Gift, is a fabulous gift. And William, I'm so glad that you were able to join me today. And I wish you nothing but continued ongoing success. Do you have another book online that you're going to be doing pretty soon? Ready to work on some more?
The Christmas 2011 book goes into the publisher this evening. And
oh, for heaven's sake.
And that'll be announced sometime probably in the early fall of next year.
Well, you'll need to send me a copy.
I will do so, Donna. Thank you for such a gracious interview. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's been a delight having you as a guest. R. William Bennett, this marvelous book, The Christmas Gift. It's truly a heartwarming story of compassion, forgiveness, but more than that, about the wisdom of good that is inside of every one of us. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be back in just a moment. rwilliambennett.com. Check out the site. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Hi, welcome back. This is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And I want to let you know, on an upcoming program this month, we are going to be having back as a guest, one of the many guests that we'll be having on the Donna Sebo Show, Rio. Now, maybe you had the opportunity to hear her last month about raw food and how to fix healthy meals and enable your body to do what it needs to do. Well, I have been reviewing a number of pieces of material. I do this every day, like I said during the chat with William, I review anywhere from 400 to 600 books a year, which is a lot of reading. And I've come across so much health material. And we're going to be doing interviews with people, physicians, in fact. We're going to be talking about how important the food you eat makes in your life. Now, we hear this, but lots of times we don't register with it, but it does. Oh, my goodness. It does make a difference. So Rio is going to be sharing the airwaves with me And we're going to be talking, and I'll be sure to let you know as soon as she's going to be coming on, we're going to be talking about what you can do to bring vibrant vitality and good health into your space. None of us are perfect. And, of course, around the holidays, my goodness, I don't know about you, but my sweet tooth just does a cha-cha-cha every time I get close to chocolate or I see some of these marvelous, marvelous creations. I was in a German bakery yesterday. I'm telling you, I found they had marzipan. They had these cheesecakes that when you looked at them, you could swear your left thigh expanded an inch and a half without even tasting anything. I mean, these are wonderful things, and you should enjoy them. You don't want to have it every morning for breakfast, but you should be able to enjoy them without guilt. So we're going to have a lot of different things on the show upcoming regarding health and wellness and your being able to enjoy a life that's going to give you a sense of wellness. And it takes a willingness to be able to shift and to change. So we've got a lot of good things coming up. Oops, don't want to forget, December 11th, for those of you that are listening in the Western Washington area, I'm doing a special appearance for a magnificent family event that's being held in downtown Tacoma called the Dickens Festival. And it is going to be on December the 11th. That's just a week from this Saturday. And we are going to be having a marvelous time there. I'm going to be at the King's Bookstore. I'll be dressed in costume, and I will be doing readings for people while they're there. And if you want to come down, please do so, because part of the proceeds are going to be going towards the charity that the event will be supporting this year. Every year, they have one or two charities that they give a certain percentage of everything that's collected by the businesses and the vendors like myself that will be doing appearances, and it all goes into that. So it's a wonderful, wonderful event. They're into their fifth year, I believe it is. So December the 11th, mark that on your calendar. I'll be at King's Bookstore from 11 until 4, but I believe the event itself starts at about 9 o'clock in the morning and goes until 6 in the evening. So it's wonderful. I don't think we're going to have snow this year, but I'd love to see you. Come by, say hello, and enjoy the festivities of this wonderful event. I want to mention to those of you that may have a story of the paranormal, I would like for you to send me your story. I'm collecting those stories. They're going into a file. And as of the 1st of January, that will be the cutoff date for this particular collection of stories. And I'm aiming for 100, so I hope to see yours in that group. So send me an email with your particular story about a paranormal psychic experience that really changed your life. Send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Of course, I want your contact information as well. Donna at DelphiInternational.com. And by the way, this being the holiday season, do you have a special recipe that is just an all-time family favorite? Well, if you do, I'd love to know about it so I could share it with my listeners on the air. Because I think good food is just right there, hand in hand with good fellowship, with friends, family, even strangers that you may find that you want to invite into your home. Food is that wonderful component that brings together a fellowship. And when you fix good food, not tasteless stuff, but really good food, you will find that it just makes conversation with people a lot easier. Nothing breaks up tension in a room, but let's say a good pot of soup or something special that maybe belongs into your family's family cookbook. You know, I've got a girlfriend that's wanting to do that. She's putting together, I have not done this for her yet. She said, Donna, you're a good cook. I want to know some of your favorite recipes. She's putting together a cookbook, and she's been working on this for a few years. And she has some recipes of her own, and she's an awesome cook herself. And she has some recipes of her own, and she said, I've got this idea about how I want to do it, and she's collecting these things, and one day I'm looking forward to having her as a guest when she's going to share some of her delicious recipes. I've often said I'm so glad I don't live too close to her because I probably get so fat I couldn't get out the front door. But anyway, good food. This is the time of the year when we want to enjoy it, but we also want to make sure that we take care of ourselves and we enjoy good health. There have been so many conversations that I've had with various individuals just in the last week or so that make me cognizant of the fact that we really need to be mindfully present where we are. We need to, in every moment, as much as we are capable of doing it, realize that it's the moment we're living and how we're handling that moment that makes a difference in our lives. Which, by the way, if you'd like for me to give you some insight about your life, 888-815-9756 is the number to call into. I came across this delightful poem, and it's titled, Said Yesterday to Tomorrow. When I was young, like you, I, too, was fond of boasting of all I meant to do. But while I fell a-dreaming along the pleasant way before I scarcely knew it, I found I was today. And as today, so quickly my little course was run, I had not time to finish one half the things begun. Would I could try it over, but I can ne'er go back a yesterday forever. I now must be alack. And so, my good tomorrow, if you would make a name that history shall cherish upon its roll of fame, be all prepared and ready your noblest part to play in those new fleeting hours when you shall be today. That came from the Pacific. I have no idea where that was, but I thought, wow, that is so true. When you can really be focused in the now, it's okay to have the goal. But as the poem says, many times we have sidelines of experiences that get us sidetracked. So when you can live in the moment, you realize that it is this moment that counts. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to manage it? Are you sitting and just worrying yourself sick because you can't control certain things? Or you get through watching the news and you're just so agitated that you can't enjoy where you are in the moment now and being grateful for what you have, for what you're doing, who maybe is in your life, friends, family. All of these things are so important. So being aware of the now, we're into the holiday season. Hey, take time to enjoy the beauty, the creativity, the abundance that is around you. I don't care if you don't have a nickel in your pocket. Enjoy it. I've known those days, and all I would have to do is take myself out and do some shopping with my eyes. And maybe, just bundle up and just really enjoy the beauty of what's around. And by golly, a kind word with a stranger, a laugh with a friend, it turns everything into something very special. That's the magic. The magic of everyday living, especially during the holiday season. Let's take our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Brenda, calling from Tempe, Arizona.
Hi, Brenda. Welcome to the show. And are you just enjoying some gloriously balmy temperatures in Tempe?
It's wonderful.
I bet. Boy, the people in Georgia with the tornadoes that went through there, they've got warmer temps, but my goodness, they've been hit so hard. So I just think that Arizona, this time of the year, is a place that so many people just really enjoy. They enjoy being in that environment because of the beautiful weather.
I completely agree.
All right, Brenda, let's get down to business with you. Now, the first thing I am looking at with you is no nonsense. Don't get distracted. Stay the course. Don't try to set more than 5 objectives. Look at each one as a priority, and you're going to have all kinds of things that are going to come into your head. And I would say focus on, if you've got 5 objectives, that's the number I'm getting, position them. Put them up on a whiteboard. And then maybe on some days, objective number 1 that's first and foremost has to slip back to 4 because you've got to take care of objective 3. There's various things that you need to become a little bit more flexible with, but don't add any more to what you are already trying to achieve. because what's happening is you're siphoning off the focus that you need to have for yourself. And when you siphon away that concentrated energy and discipline that is needed to maintain the focus on those five objectives, regardless of how they have to be balanced, then what occurs is you again, you'll get sidetracked, and then 6 months later you're saying, oh, for heaven's sakes, why did I let that happen? I could have done it differently. Also, I am looking at a sense of grief within you because you are observing that there's an association with someone that is changing. Now, what I'd like for you to be aware of is that this is not a bad change. It doesn't mean that this person is going to be totally out of your life, but it does mean that it's time for you to recognize that you and this other individual have moved into entirely different patternings of experience. So you're not going to be able to share conversations like you did in the past because with each of you, your priorities are different, and it's not good or bad. But you'll find that you are not as at ease with this person and sharing certain information with them as maybe you would have been, let's say, a year ago. That's okay, too. Don't make it good or bad. They are merely establishing their own levels of priorities, and that is good for them. It doesn't necessarily feel good to you, but that's just the way it is. And it doesn't make them a bad person. They are just in their own shift. You know, we have people who come into our lives that are meant to be there for a while, and then others might, you might have the association with them on one level or another for most of your life. But many people come in and then they go out. And it's not good, it's not bad. Now, Brenda, we're going to break. Will you stay with me? And when we come back, I'll get, take your question.
Okay.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment with Brenda's question. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Hello, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone number 888-815-9756 if you'd like to chat with me. Brenda, what was your question for me? Thank you for waiting, by the way.
Thank you. On the shifting relationship with the individual, is that someone that is my personal life or business life?
Personal.
Oh, personal.
Mm-hmm. It's in your personal. And they may have also had some association with you on a business level at some time, but this is more personal. This, to me, is someone, let's say, that maybe you had a friend for a lot of years, and when you get together, it's like you are not able to communicate on the same level you were able to do before, because they have evolved into a whole different mindset. And again, it's not unusual. It's not unusual, and it doesn't. There's nothing wrong with them. They're a fine individual. There's nothing that I'm seeing here that's dark or sinister. Not at all. But it's important for you to be aware of that, because there is a part of you that may feel like, gee whiz, there must be something wrong with me. And it has nothing to do with you. It merely is the reality that they are changing as an individual. They are changing. And so you are changing also. Your perspectives, your interests are changing. And so you're just not going to have the same kind of a relationship with them.
Wow.
And just make it okay. Just make it okay.
Well, I guess I have my work cut out for me.
Oh, I don't even think it's a matter of work, dear. I think it's a matter of being aware. That's all. There's no work involved here. It is an awareness that there is change that's evolving. That's all. So you flow with the change, and you don't try to put a label on it or make something good, bad, or indifferent. It's just what it is.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. And a happy holiday season to you.
Happy holidays.
This is Donna Sebo. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Now, I do need to let you know, my newsletter went out. Whoops, got a dial tone there. There we go. My newsletter has gone out, so that is going to be up on the website, and I'm sure that is going to be up on my website today. And I have to apologize to you, because I wasn't able to get my list of guests up, and there was an error on one of the shows, so all of that is going to be corrected. But regardless, the listing of the guests, who they are, and what's going on is going to be coming up today, so that is going to be on time. Let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is Marianne, and I'm calling from California.
Hi, Marianne. Where in California?
Oh, in San Diego.
San Diego. One of my favorite places. Wow. I can hardly believe how popular, but it's so beautiful. It's just so beautiful down in San Diego.
Very warm, so I have no complaint.
Oh, you betcha you shouldn't complain. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's get down to business with you, Marianne. The first thing that I'm observing is a plan, and it's as if there's a big whiteboard in front of you, and you are saying, well, this is my agenda, and boy, you're just putting things down right and left, and then I'm seeing you standing back, looking at the whiteboard, and just going, I can't believe I did this. And then taking an eraser and erasing the whole thing. You're saying, ask to yourself, now I've got this down in black and white, I'm seeing exactly what my objectives are, I'm looking at this, and you are recognizing, apparently, a pattern that you have had, and there's this aha moment, and you go, what am I doing this for? This isn't really what I want. And that's why you're going to work with what I would describe as a clean slate. You're going to abandon some plans that maybe you thought were just the end-all of end-all, and you're saying, I've changed. This is what I would have done maybe 2 years ago, but that's really not what I want. So I'm seeing you taking some time to think. And with this whiteboard in front of you, instead of trying to fill it up real fast, which is your normal organizational self, you're saying, wait a minute, before I put anything down on this whiteboard as far as objectives, plans, etc., I really want to ask myself, what do I want? And I have to compliment you, because not many people are willing to do that. Most people will just stay busy, being busy, being busy, being busy, and they don't take that time to think. I'm seeing you doing it. And I have to compliment you because it's going to really make a difference. I think you're not going to really have what I'd call the major agenda laid out until about the 2nd of February. It's going to take you some time, and you're going to have a wonderful holiday season, by the way. But I'm looking at you thinking and asking the question, what do I really want? Why is it important to me? Am I wanting this because I want someone else in my life to be fulfilled and happy and contented? Or is this really what I want? And you're going to find out so much about yourself, it's absolutely amazing. Then I'm seeing you going to the whiteboard and being very clear, very determined, and saying, I am going to be sure that I have this, thus, that, and so taken care of. You're going to do an excellent job. You're then going to find that you have a plan that's pretty much going to hold true through 2012. And you have got some major objectives that you are going to reach. And you're going to do it because it's the right thing for you to do, not because anybody's telling you or it's to please someone else. It's going to be because it's the right thing for you to give your attention to. So I think you've got some big changes evolving in your personal life that are giving you pause and thoughtfulness so that you can look at a career direction that maybe even 3 or 4 months ago, you would not have even given it the time of day of consideration.
Yeah.
So you've got some big things that are evolving here. And again, I have to compliment you. Oops, I'm looking at something. Marianne, oh. I'm out of time, hon.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Now, I needed to let you know something. Call me back if you want to ask me a question and remind me we talked on the air because I always give that opportunity. But we're out of time, so you'll have to call me back.
Well, I thank you for that information, and I definitely will call you back. I appreciate that, though. It was dead on.
Wonderful. Wonderful holiday season to you, dear. Have a great day.
You too.
Donna Stebo. My goodness, the hour just zipped by. My thanks to my guest, William Bennett. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking of food, Mayan recipes. Woohoo! Good stuff. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.